Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Q&A session following on from the D4T4 AGM earlier this morning. For those of you that have looked at your RNSs, you'll have seen that the resolutions were all passed with over 99% votes in favor, and that RNS went out immediately after the AGM this morning. The purpose of today is to put an opportunity for shareholders, not primarily retail shareholders, to put questions to management. We asked those who had questions to submit them in advance. I've now got a list in front of me of nine questions that were submitted in advance, and so we'll go through those one at a time. Obviously, we're running the AGM in a slightly different way than previous years because of COVID, so hopefully this is a sort of COVID-safe way of allowing retail investors to engage with management. Certainly, at the end of the session, we welcome any feedback that people have got as to whether the session has been a productive and effective way of having that feedback. In the room with me here in Sunbury, the D4T4 headquarters in the U.K., is Peter Kear, Chief Executive.
Morning.
Morning. On the video from Chicago, we've got Bill Bruno, who's Deputy CEO and CEO Designate. Bill obviously wasn't able to travel over for the AGM this week because of the travel restrictions, so he's joining us on the video link. Bill, before we move into the sort of meat of the Q&A, would you like to just do a quick introduction for the people that haven't yet had an opportunity to see you or meet you?
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you, Peter. Good morning, everybody. So as Peter said, I'm Bill Bruno, based out of Chicago. I've been actually with the company since 2018, and started in my role sort of overseeing the growth in the Americas business here for D4T4. But my time actually with the Celebrus CDP platform actually goes all the way back to about 2005, when I originally met the team that was driving that product forward, so well ahead of the acquisition by D4T4 in 2015. Started a consulting business in the analytics space after the dot-com crash in the early 2000s. Ran that business and eventually sold it to a different U.K.-based publicly traded company, Ubiquiti, in August of  2013. For the better part of 6 years, ran North and South America for Ubiquiti in my time there as well. After Ubiquiti, decided to move on and figure out something to do something different. Lo and behold, D4T4 was looking for somebody to help drive growth in one of our key markets, being the United States, and happily took that role because of the people that I had met along the way and the technology platform, which before they paid me to say it, I referred to as the best data capture platform in the industry today. I spent a lot of time on the boards, advisory, and other for many of the competitors to the Celebrus CDP, and have been in my role spending quite a bit of time helping us in our market positioning and helping us on the front lines better position the platform for growth. Really excited to be stepping into this role. Very humbled and honored to be able to do that. For me, it's something I'm extremely passionate about, and also very excited to be bringing a new product to the market as well in the Celebrus Fraud Data Platform. So looking forward to leading the company into the next phase of growth, and very much appreciate all of you taking the time today.
Thank you, Bill. And before we move into the Q&A, I should just also say we've got the other two non-executive directors of the company on the call, Monica Biddulph and Peter Whiting. I don't know whether you're visible to everybody, but if you want to just quickly wave so people can.
Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks, Pete.
Okay, so let's move into the meat of this session, which is the Q&A. I think, Pete, we've scheduled this to last half an hour. Is that right?
Sure.
So we've got about 25 minutes. So Bill, I know you get passionate about answering questions about the future of the business and about the product. So if you're going on a bit too long, I might sort of cut you off. But okay, so let's move in. These questions are not necessarily in any particular order, so I'll read the questions out, and then I'll ask either Bill or Pete to answer them. So the first question: with the launch of FDP, how strong is the cross-selling opportunity opportunity with existing clients, and are you seeing any early successes there yet? So I think, Bill, can I pass that one over to you?
Sure, absolutely. So I think the short answer is yes. Now I'll give you the long answer, and Peter, you can cut me off as you see fit. But I think from generally speaking, existing customers and what actually drove our decision to invest in the fraud data platform a couple of years ago was actually because we had several of our clients that were more on the higher end of maturity trying to use the marketing data from the CDP for fraud purposes. So that was one of the main drivers. So as a result, as you might suspect, existing customers are showing some considerable interest in the platform. We feel very fortunate to have the reaction thus far in the market, only 2 short months after launch. And from our perspective, though, there is some learning, you know, and I think that the key point to make is that the fraud teams are very separate from the teams that we've historically sold to within the organization. So even within existing accounts, you know, there's some work to do to get connected to the right people. And so we're approaching it really in two main ways. So one is in bringing in new partnerships such as Quantexa and GB Group and going to market with them. And the second is working across existing accounts and finding the right people in those organizations to have those conversations with. And we continue to staff up accordingly to ensure that we're able to put the right level of focus in both of those areas.
Okay, great. Thanks, Bill. The next one is probably for you as well, Bill, actually. And I know this is a subject that you're very passionate about and could probably talk all day about, but the question is, why are your products not affected by the various privacy and identity regulation changes?
You're right. I could go on and on about that. So I'll keep this one short as well. But I think at the end of the day, when you look across the competitive landscape, whether that's an Adobe or a Google or a Tealium or really any other solution, they are all third-party solutions. And what I mean by that, because the terminology can get quite confusing, is that customers that choose or brands that choose to partner with those technologies send data to those technologies outside of their controlled framework. The Celebrus suite of products is truly first party. You'll see that in all of our wording. And what we mean by that is clients actually own and control the platform and all the data collected by it. So that can be in private cloud instance, it can be on-prem, it can be in some hybrid of that. But inherently, we're fully embedded in the client's digital infrastructure. So that's one key differentiator. The other is the patented capabilities of our platform, how we choose to identify individuals, and the technology that we've put in place, as further emphasized by the first-party identity graph that we brought to market recently, that continue to ensure that our platform is not impacted by any of the changes from Apple, any of the browsers, or really any of the privacy regulations. And the entire platform is underpinned by a control capability that ensures for marketing purposes that all the data that we capture adheres to local legislation in the markets that we operate within. And as of today, we operate within 27 different markets. So our customers are very privacy conscious, and our platform makes sure to solve for that in very unique ways.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Question number three. How have your industry partnerships evolved over the last year? And are you now competing with any of them, given the level of insight and analysis that your data tools now provide? And perhaps, Pete, you could start with that. And then, Michelle, if you've got anything to add, we'll go on.
Sure. Our partnerships continually evolve. And we're very fortunate that those partnerships seem to be getting stronger and stronger. It's very seldom that we actually compete with our partners, but on the odd occasion where we have, there's this wonderful world called co-opetition, where sometimes we cooperate and sometimes we compete, and it's actually fairly, you know, it's a well-known scenario in our industry, or acceptable practice at least. I think the most interesting thing actually on the partner side is that what we're seeing is that our partners are competing with each other. Obviously, some of our partners have similar applications and software and solutions. But the really interesting thing for me and for our company is that often now we're seeing that the only consistent piece between those partners' bids is the Celebrus data platform for data collection. And I think as long as it continues to be that way, we've had customers in the past where they've been using our software. They started using our software and Teradata applications. They then moved from Teradata to SaaS and still using the Celebrus data collection. And then they've, in fact, finally started to move to Pega systems now. And yet again, the only consistent piece, although they've gone from Teradata to SAS to Pega, is the fact that they're still using our data for collecting digital data.
Okay. Bill, any further thoughts from you on that question?
No, I think that was said perfectly.
Okay. This next question then, question four, sounds like it's come from somebody who's been following the business for quite a while. Are you expecting a second half weighting again this financial year? Pete, can I give that one to you, as obviously that's a favourite topic that you've spent many hours talking about.
I have, in fact, probably pretty much in every investor presentation we do is, you know, what are you doing to change the H1, H2 weighting? The short answer is yes, there will still be an H2 weighting, just by the nature of when, for people who don't know us very well, we're making a transition to annual recurring revenue from a perpetual software model. And of course, annual recurring revenue differs very much from, say, software as a service or whatever. And in fact, what happens is when we strike that contract, when that contract is signed, we actually recognize that year's revenue at that point. And for us, H2 is the strongest part of our year. Having said that, last year was an exceptional variance between H1 and H2, which we won't see again this year. And traditionally, we've been somewhere between 30 and 40% in H1 and the balance in H2. And I think we'll continue to go along that route, although we will be growing our annual recurring revenue. I think the last point to note on that as well is that our annual recurring revenue contracts, unlike software as a service, we actually sign multi-year agreements. So we're not just talking about a single year's revenue, we're talking 2 or 3 or 4 years of annual recurring revenue contracts that we sign initially. That's probably covered.
Okay, thanks very much, Pete. Question five then. How much will you be investing to support the rollout of Celebrus FDP, that's the fraud platform, this year and next? Bill, perhaps I can throw that one over to you.
Sure. So I guess for those that perhaps haven't heard, you know, the reason that we chose to invest in ourselves and develop the fraud platform, of which over the last two reporting periods we fully expensed about $1.5 million, was because when we looked at the landscape and we were looking for potential acquisitions or bolt-ons, as you might suspect, you come across a variety of companies that are not really producing any revenue but claim that the minute you acquire them that they will. And so they come through with pretty crazy evaluations. From our perspective, as we looked at what our clients were trying to do with data, and we looked at and spoke with Forrester and Gartner and others and got a sort of a lay of the land from industry experts on the opportunity in the fraud sector, we decided that as a cash generative business and having cash in the bank and no debt on record, that it made sense for us to make that investment. So we obviously want that platform to be successful. So in this current reporting period, we will continue to invest to the tune of somewhere between 1.3 and 1.5 million. And in the following reporting period, right around $1 million. And that investment will be in product development and partner integration development. It'll be in people, both in terms of sales, pre-sales, and delivery. And we'll be on the marketing and PR side as well to continue to go louder with our message and make sure that people are aware of the differentiated platform that we've brought to the market.
Thanks, Bill. And I think it's probably worth saying that, you know, that's obviously certainly as far as sort of year two and out into the future is concerned, very much predicated on the success we see in this year, because quite clearly, if there's an exciting opportunity there, we want to make sure we maximize that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Okay, question six. This is a long question, this, so forgive me if I take a little while to just
take a breath.
I need a drink before I read this one out. Question six. I feel that optically, the true underlying quality of the business has perhaps been masked recently. Firstly, by the ongoing transition to software as a service, and now by the investment in the fraud data platform. Bill has mentioned previously that the fraud data platform is being treated as its own business internally. Would it be worth going that one step further and reporting it as a separate segment in the numbers? And then it carries on. an FDP segment with negligible revenue and operating expenses of a circa 1.3, 1.5 in year one could then be stripped out of the core business, which would unmask things somewhat and clearly ring-fence the new investments made and subsequently show the evolving payoff. Bill, did you get the question? Basically, are we doing enough to highlight what fraud is doing to our overall group results, I think is the question.
Absolutely. And you did a great job making your way through that long question there, Peter. I think, you know, the simplest answer here is that our intent is to only contract the fraud data platform on an annual recurring revenue basis. So that includes for any existing customers who still may be on a legacy perpetual license for the customer data platform or customer data management solution. As a result, we will report upon the ARR revenue metric for the FDP going forward to provide that level of clarity. And obviously from our perspective, as Peter alluded to at the end of the last question, we'll continue to monitor the performance of that business and look for opportunities to drive further growth or opportunities to address new use cases. It's, I think, also worth mentioning that during the two short months, we've already built quite a product roadmap for the fraud platform based upon feedback from partners, existing clients, and prospects that we're speaking to in the market for other areas that we can invest upon as well.
Okay. Pete, anything from you to add to that one?
No, I think I've covered it.
Okay. Well, I think one of the things, just to sort of put a broad perspective on this as well, is we're acutely aware of the need to make sure that investors can actually understand the value that we're creating by building this new fraud data platform. And clearly, any business that is starting from zero revenue but requires OPEX invested in it to grow has an impact on the group results while that's transition to a sort of fully evolved business is happening. And we will be very mindful of the need to make sure our reporting to the markets makes it really clear what that investment is and why we're doing it. But potentially, we believe it's a huge driver of shareholder value to maximise the opportunity that's there for that business. Okay, question seven. 73% of sales were to the US last year. Page 75 of the annual report refers to that, based on the domicile of the customers / partners. What will be the rough true picture if the end user locations were used? Pete, that sounds like a one for you.
Yeah, so as you say, we're obliged to disclose our revenues by geography. And the sales there are mainly to our partners. So Teradata, SAS, Pega, etc. And you know, when we invoice to our partners, it's primarily to their headquarter locations, it's primarily in US dollars. And really, we don't disclose a precise geographical split. And I think probably what's worth mentioning or worth noting is that we do operate, or our customers operate, our software and services in 27 countries globally. But if you wanted an approximate, well, let's put it this way. The US is the single largest market for us currently, and it's over 50%. So, you know, that's probably the best split we can give you. And I think, you know, it's continuing along those lines. We see the US market as potentially the largest opportunity for us, not just with the customer data platform, but also with our fraud data platform and customer data management software as well.
Perhaps worth noting that it's no coincidence that Bill speaks with an American accent and is sitting in Chicago. But we see that as a huge opportunity for the business to make sure that we're maximising that US opportunity. Okay, question eight. Given strong market trends, and then brackets, privacy, online, digital transformation, etc., is now not the time to grow very aggressively, much also beyond FTP. So let me read that again. Given market trends, and i.e. privacy, online, digital transformation, should the business be growing more aggressively to maximize long-term value? And then in brackets, the question goes on, Is D4, T4 being too prudent when a value maximising strategy might be land grab rather than profit focused by adding more direct marketing and sales towards winning more customers? Bill, I think that definitely sounds like one for you. I'm sure you've got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think when you look across the customer data platform, and if you've followed me on social media, you've seen me be quite loud about the fact that our platform does things that, in my opinion, no other solution can. In the industry, we've sort of referred to it, Pete and I, as the perfect storm at the moment, in terms of the many of the challenges you mentioned in your question. And so in that regard, we are investing and looking to capitalize on that opportunity in a meaningful way. We've built sort of a go loud campaign, as we're referring to it, because we don't have a really fun name for it. Maybe we should rename that something a bit more fun. But it's in essence, we've brought on a US PR firm to help drive our message globally. We're continuing to invest in marketing, and we're standing up a direct sales capability by bringing in a new head of sales international and looking to fill various roles across the world in our key markets. Furthermore, as you've probably seen through the RNS that we put out recently, we made the acquisition of the Prickly Cactus business. And the sole purpose of that was to drive revenue from existing accounts while also helping us stand up a more direct selling capacity as well, and making sure that we're arming the field teams with the right materials to be successful in that role. So I think the message I'd give here is watch this space. We'll continue to amp up our loudness, so to speak, and we will continue to sort of reposition the platforms accordingly in the market and be a bit more aggressive in how we go to market as well, given the opportunity we have in front of us.
Thanks, Bill. Perhaps I could just add a little bit of extra color to that. And anybody who's ever heard me talk as chairman in any of the other roles I've got, it's always a challenge when a public company wants to accelerate growth, because accelerating growth inevitably means investing, and that can have an impact on short-term profitability. And certainly, one of the things that we are very mindful of as a board is that our job is to maximise long-term shareholder value. And it's always going to be a balance between investing today for future growth versus delivering profitability and dividends in the short term. I think probably one of the things that we have to be mindful of as well is that when you start into a new business like the fraud marketplace, we need to be sure that we're getting the maximum value recognition within the whole group for that bit of the business, and that we don't end up with the whole group being worth less or valued less than the sum of the parts. So we're very mindful of that. And I think, you know, we will be working very carefully to make sure that our reporting reflects the fact that we have got almost a startup within the overall group. But also that startup could potentially become very valuable given the uniqueness of the product and its competitive advantage within the space. Okay.
I think one other thing, I didn't mean to buzz in. For anyone who's not seen a demonstration or an example of the fraud data platform, I think it's possibly one of the most exciting things that we've done as a company. And if you'd like to see a demonstration, and there is a recording of a demonstration that Bill and our head of Celebrus R&D performed recently, and I would definitely suggest, please reach out. We can direct you to it. I'm not sure if it's currently on the website yet, or if it's on FinCaps. Some FinCaps website. So I would definitely see it. It's worth it. It really is. And it's very interesting.
Sorry. There's also a public facing YouTube link. So you can feel free to reach out to me directly on social media if you want a link to that, and I can send it your way for those of you on the call today.
Okay. We're about 3 minutes away from our cutoff. Just to sort of wrap up, Bill, obviously in the process of transitioning to take over the CEO role. Any final thoughts from you about the future?
You know, I think hopefully what you've seen from us is that we've got quite a bit of opportunity as a business. What we also have is a business that has performed fantastically over the years under Pete's leadership. And so from my perspective, you know, it's all about creating a seamless transition. Pete and I have continued to work extremely closely day to day to make that as successful as possible. And I've appreciated and continue to appreciate his guidance in that role and the guidance from the board as well. And I think what you'll see from us in the coming months is quite a bit of communication around what our platforms can do. You'll start to see a new approach to marketing. You'll start to see a lot more of the platform itself than maybe you've seen in the past. I know I've had several investors comment on how nice it is to see the platform. And candidly, that's because of our R&D team and our pre-sales efforts to make the platform more inviting and easier to show to people, which is going to help on the sales front as well. So you'll see quite a bit of content coming from us. I couldn't be more excited about stepping into this role. I care very deeply about making sure that our technology platforms are used by some of the largest brands around the world and that we continue to put that into more hands. And so from that perspective, I'm extremely excited for this.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Any thoughts from you, Pete, before
we... No. I think Bill wrapped up really well. I think the only last one was on the recording of the...
So the last question really was one which just for the question was, as a shareholder, hopefully there will be a recording of this Q&A session. Can you tell me how to access it?
Have a seat. I just need to listen. No, that's okay. It'll be literally seconds.
Okay. And the answer is yes, there will be a recording of this session. It will be on the investor relations section of the D4T4 website, and it'll probably be there later today. So on that note, I make it about 11:28 or 11:29. So hopefully everybody's found that useful. If, as I said at the beginning, please do give us feedback so that we can improve the way that we do these events in future. I think probably given the global nature of the business and the increasingly sort of disparate geographic nature of the shareholder base, this type of forum is probably the most effective way of running these type of sessions, but we'd like to make sure they're as effective as possible. So please do give us some feedback so that we can continue to iterate and improve them as we go forward. So on that note, I'll call this session to a close. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Peter, for your contributions. And thank everybody who's joined to listen to us today. And hopefully we look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye now.